Some of the views expressed on the Mormon Channel are solely for the education and inspiration of our audience and may not represent the official position of the Church.
We believe in God, the Eternal Father.
We believe in the Bible to be the Word of God.
We believe in being honest, true, chaste, benevolent, virtuous.
We believe that through the atonement of Christ, all mankind.
We also believe the Book of Mormon to be the Word of God.
We may say that we follow the admonition of Paul. We believe all things. We hope all things. We have endured many things.
Welcome to Why I Believe. I'm Rick Starr. Many of you have heard the oft-cited quote from one of the survivors of the Martin Handcart Company, Francis Webster. He said, "I have pulled my handcart when I was so weak and weary from illness and lack of food that I could hardly put one foot ahead of the other. I have looked ahead and seen a patch of sand or a hill slope, and I have said, I can only go that far, and there I must give up, for I cannot pull the load through it. I've gone to that sand, and when I reached it, the cart began pushing me. I have looked back many times to see who was pushing my cart, but my eyes saw no one. I knew then that the angels of God were there. Was I sorry that I chose to come by handcart? No, neither then nor any minute of my life since. The price we paid to become acquainted with God was a privilege to pay, and I am thankful that I was privileged to come in the Martin Handcart Company." We often hear of the trials and extremities of those handcart pioneers, but what about the many, many miracles that they encountered? Our guest today on Why I Believe is the acclaimed film producer, writer, director, and cinematographer, T.C. Christensen. Also joined with another guest, Kim Stinger. T.C. has recently produced a film called 17 Miracles, which will be released soon. And he has come here to talk a little bit about the many miracles that he discovered as he was doing research for this film. And so we're going to hear a lot of those stories. And Kim is a descendant of one of the pioneers and had the neat experience of being able to be an extra in the film. And her children also played some main parts in the film. So welcome both of you, T.C. and Kim.
Thanks
for being with us today. Now, T.C., many of our listeners will know you as the man behind many LDS films, both produced by the Church and independently. Some of those are Emma Smith, Joseph Smith, Prophet of the Restoration, Testaments, The Work and the Glory, the John Tanner story, which is a story of your ancestry. You have some neat pioneer ancestry. Why don't you introduce our listeners to some of that background?
John Tanner was my great-great-grandfather, and joined the Church very early in the Church's history, and he had amazing things happen to him. But the main thing that the John Tanner story, I think, is known for is that he was such a stalwart member of the Church. So it's wonderful to have him as an ancestor and be descended from such a noble man as John Tanner.
Yeah. Well, the story behind that is pretty neat. He gave everything. He gave everything.
Over and over.
So, very, very nice, neat story there. Well, T.C., as you were doing research for the film 17 Miracles, and that's what we want to focus on is the miracles of those pioneers, what led you to do the story you did? I understand that you originally started out with a little different aim in mind, but you ended up doing something different.
Yeah, what was attractive to me about the story was that Sweetwater story that we've all heard about the boys helping them across. And then as I got into to research, I realized, there's so much more to it than that. That's really just a small part of this. And as I would read books and read journals, so often you're reading about a family and then they get in dire circumstances, and then there's a miracle. And then you go to another family, and I realized that's the thread. That's what would make a great film, is not just this suffering and pain and showing. And, of course, we deal with that because you have to have the low to understand the high. But I just felt like this needs to be positive and redemptive and show people how if you keep faith, if your faith is strong, then miracles come as a result.
Hmm. That's a really good point. Now, you covered many stories from the handcart pioneers. And we're specifically focusing on the Willie and Martin handcart groups. There were many handcart. I think there were about 10 total handcart journeys, but those two journeys are the most notable because of the struggles that they had late into the season. Can you, for any of our listeners who, many of them have heard of the stories of these two groups, but maybe just give a quick background of some of the reasons why they got started out late and so on and so forth, and then we'll get into some of the specific stories.
Well, it was the first year that the handcart experiment was tried, 1856. And so they didn't really have it down. I mean, you know, they were figuring it out, and Brigham Young thought that this would be a, maybe a good way that it could be cheaper and just as effective and get the people to Zion. And it was kind of a comedy of errors, if that's a term you can use for this kind of a disaster, but it was just one thing after another going wrong that delayed them. And as a result, when they left Iowa City, which was the dropping off point from the railroad, they had to handcart from there. They were weeks late. And then another major issue that happened was that there was an early winter. And there are many things that happened, but as a result, they were caught in Wyoming in early storms. October 19th, the first snowstorm came, which is unusual even now for a storm to be that early. And as a result, they were in dire circumstances.
Now, many of these pioneers were converts from England. Isn't that correct?
Yes, most of them were from England, and then there were Danish saints, Wales, and Swedish. But you've got all of these people coming together with a common cause, and many of them can't communicate with each other. That's actually one thing that I took off on, trying to find some humor for the film, because I didn't want the whole thing to be just all sadness and misery and all the there's so much joy that would have happened, and that gave me an opportunity with kind of a fish out of water story, because you've got these people come over from England, Denmark, they've never seen a buffalo before, let alone a buffalo chip or a rattlesnake or any, and so that gave some good launching points for some very, very good jokes.
I read also that many of them, starting out in England, were planning on coming across the plains in wagons, as they had heard many of the other pioneers had, and they had saved enough money and so on and so forth. But because of the circumstances of so many poor saints, many of them were asked to sacrifice their own wagon travel for a less expensive travel and give their money up. Isn't that correct?
It is. And we don't really deal with that with the film, but a great example is a person that we have in the film, Jens Nielsen, played by Thomas Coford, who your audience would know as playing the Savior in Testaments, brought him over here because he's a Dane, lives in near Copenhagen, and wanted an authentic Danish person. But Jens Nielsen got his family. They had some money, and his family got all the way over to Iowa City and then made really an amazing sacrifice and decided, yep, we'll give this money to help other people, and we'll just push a handcart ourselves. And then they ended up being really in terrible conditions, and only with a handcart where they could have had a wagon.
As you dive into the stories that you tell of these pioneers and the miracles that they encountered, how did you choose? What miracles? I mean, there were more than just 17. That's the name of the film, 17 Miracles. But what did your research bring out?
Well, you know, there were several criteria for choosing which ones to use. One of them was, is there a lesson to be learned by this? You know, is there something, you know, history has to be relevant to our day. And I wanted the film to show people today messages and give them hope for their lives, not just be a window into the past, but to help them today. So that was one criteria. Another criteria was, could we film it? We're talking miracles here, you know, not all miracles, and I'm not Cecil B. DeMille, and I don't have all the money in the world, and there were some miracles I wasn't sure, you know, how could we really portray it and do it in a good way that doesn't seem hokey. So that was another one. Then another reason that I would choose a miracle is hopefully there were family threads, because if you can let the audience see that this is the same family that you met earlier, and now they're having another wonderful thing, a miracle, happen to them. Mm-hmm. It helps create a bond between the audience and that family.
Mm. Well, let's jump into some of the stories that you portray in the film. Where would you begin as you were sharing about any of these pioneers?
Well, the protagonist of the film is Levi Savage, who is really quite well known in the church. But a thing that was not well known, and I did not know until getting into the research, is that Levi Savage was a member of the Mormon Battalion, went up the coast to San Francisco, that area, you know, with that group of the battalion. And then they were asked to stop up in the mountains and investigate and deal with this disaster that had happened up there. So Levi Savage is there at the discovery of the Donner Party. I couldn't pick a better opening for a protagonist, because he sees what happens when a pioneer trek goes awry. They'd started too late. They had all these issues that then he goes to New York at one point, Levi Savage does, and is asked by Captain Willie, James G. Willie, to be a sub-captain in his company. And then he keeps getting pulled further and further into this. It's looking just like, you know, the same situation as the Donner Party.
Wow.
And Levi Savage stands up and says in Florence, Nebraska, I don't think we should go. It's too late in the season. But they raise their hands and they vote, we're going to go. I couldn't pick a better protagonist than that, to have a man that has that as a background. Mm-hmm. And he believes early in the film, if people get in dire circumstances, they're going to turn and become more like animals than human beings.
Like he saw in the previous experience.
But the journey that we hopefully take the viewer on is Levi's journey, which is by the end of the film, he realizes that the saints are unlike those other people. And by having enough faith in their life, they can continue to be Christ-like.
That's amazing. I never knew that he had crossed the plains and then got called into the battalion, went down through Arizona, up California, and then he ended up back in New York to do it all over again to help Hancock.
He'd gone on a mission in between. He was called to Siam. And on his way home, coming around the world, here he is in New York. It's actually, I think, a miracle. That is a miracle that Levi Savage, with that background and his expertise and his knowledge of the West and the trek and so forth, he ends up in New York, and he's there that Captain Willie can ask him to be there. After the trek was over, so many of the people in the Willie Company said many more would have died if it weren't for Levi Savage. And I don't know if that's, you know, maybe one more person would have died, or maybe 30 more. I don't know a number, but just the fact that he saved people's lives because of his background, I love that. That's a miracle.
Now, we know from, we don't know an exact number, but there were about, between the Willie and Martin Hancock companies, there were about 1,100 or 1,200 people. Is that about right?
Starting at, well, closer to 1,100 would
1,100.
Be starting out, yeah.
And about 200 total? Died somewhere around that?
Yes, and also some dropped out. Some decided to wait at various places along the way.
I see. Well, so Levi Savage, he was he not only had this experience, but he also was one of the most prolific writers about the experience, wasn't he? Is that where you gained a lot of your research?
Yeah, there's another amazing thing is he was one of the only ones doing a daily diary. There were many people who years later would write down their memories of the track, but he was one of only a few that would actually sit down at night and write down what went on that day. And many times that's very sketchy. It's just how many miles they traveled or the weather conditions or whatever. But other times there are great insights into what was going on with the trek and into what was going on with Levi's heart.
Did his you mentioned at the beginning of his story that he was against traveling because he knew that it was late in the season, but he ended up supporting and going with him and supporting the effort. You just mentioned there was a change in his heart. What did you see in his heart? What type of change did you see?
Overall, the biggest one would be that he realizes that the saints, because of faith, are able to continue to be Christ-like.
You're listening to Why I Believe on the Mormon Channel. Our guest today is T.C. Christensen, and he has come here to talk a little bit about the many miracles that he discovered as he was doing research for this film. And also with us, Kim Stinger, who was an extra in the film, and your children played some main roles in the film. But in addition to that, I guess one of the reasons that you were involved in the film is because some of your ancestors were part of these companies. Isn't that correct?
Yes. My great-great-great-great-grandfather, Nathan Tanner Porter, came and met the company at the Platte River and helped them helped them cross that river, actually, and then helped them and was there when the rescue happened.
So was he part of an early rescue team, or was he – how did he get involved?
He was in another wagon company, and they were sent to meet and travel with the Willie Hancart Company. So he kind of just joined them. He had a connection there because Patience Loader, who was on the trail, on this trek, had nursed him back to health when they had crossed – over on the ship from England. He had gotten really ill on that. And so he felt that he owed her and her family a debt of gratitude. And that was, I think, his impetus for joining up with this company and helping them.
That's neat. And there were some other ancestors also that...
Yes, I had a couple of other ancestors, William Gill Mills and John Ralston Poole, that were in the... When Brigham Young found out about the company and announced it at General Conference, they were some of the people who went back and responded to that call and were there to rescue the company.
Now, you know what's interesting about this rescue? I was thinking about this today. When we think of a rescue, we think, oh, let's get in the car and we're going to go up and, like, if some Boy Scouts are lost in the wilderness, we're going to get in the car and we're going to form a company and we find them in a day. This rescue was not a day-long venture.
It was a treacherous journey for them, too, I'm sure.
They were sometimes in dire circumstances themselves as they were going to rescue. What impressed you about being on the film as you were learning about some of these stories?
Initially, when I read the script, it was really touching to me. And Kenzie, my 14-year-old daughter, plays a young girl who dies and then is brought back to life. And being there on that day it's in the winter. We're in very, very cold weather. My daughter comes out of the makeup trailer in death makeup, which was – I didn't realize how that would affect me. But it brought home to me – how hard this really was. And the cold on the set in the winter unit was extremely exhausting. And, you know, we were there for one 10 or 12 hour day. And then we went home to our warm home and comforted our kids and, you know, got warmed up. And I think going through that, not that I have any right to compare myself to a pioneer because I did go home, but it gave me such a great appreciation for what we have. And not just for our comforts, but for the fact that these people had such a strong conviction and such a desire to go to Zion that they were willing to give up everything. And you can just feel the strength and the desire that they felt. And because of that, I think they must have had a vision. They must have had mm-hmm. some kind of, you know, we say a marvelous work. They must have felt that. They must have been blessed with that, to feel that vision of what they were doing for us. And that is a very, very real thing in my life. That gives me the desire to bring my children up unto the Lord mm-hmm. and to follow in the footsteps of that strong faith. Kimball, my 5-year-old, played a little boy that died on the trail, and it was this Nielsen family that came over from Denmark. They also brought a little girl with them from another family whose sister was in Zion, and this family didn't want to wait for their daughter to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And this family had money and ended up sacrificing, you know, and giving some of that to somebody else so that somebody else could do a handcart, but then that made them not have a wagon and have a handcart. And they end up losing this little boy. And the day we were on set with Kimball, my son Kimball, who's 5, it snowed the entire day. I don't think the snow let up at all. And we were all just miserable. We were soaked through. Kimball had holes in the little pioneer shoes they had given him. He was shivering before we even got on set.
Wow.
And, you know, there were all these little kids that were extras. And we were, you know, we'd take turns taking off their shoes and putting them in front of the heater. And it would just steam. It wasn't, you know, it didn't really even help. It just really struck me then, the feelings that you must have as a parent to not be able to warm your child or feed your child.
Mm-hmm.
And yet their spirits prevailed. And so I watched Kimball also, you know, have this makeup on, looking about dead, mm-hmm. and then lie in this common grave with these 13 people. When they had this terrible ordeal of crossing the Rocky Ridge, I think is when that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And there was in this scene, their little friend that they have been, you know, playing with in the summer scenes and whatever, is looking down on this grave at her little playmates. And that, of course, you know, was very heart-wrenching for me.
Mm.
And then Keaton plays a little boy who's threatened by wolves, and he's 2. And that was another, you know, long, cold day on set. But I felt like we were really blessed with that, because at the last minute, we kind of had some intervention and inspiration to use a dog instead of wolves. So that made me happy.
Oh, you big baby. Won't even let me put a wolf with her 2-year-old.
And they're trained wolves.
I mean, whenever you're working with your 2-year-old, you don't know what they're going to do. And he was just ornery when we got up there. I think he felt the tension in the car because the roads were treacherous going up the mountain.
Hmm.
And he just was ornery. And, you know, we finally got him asleep and got him dressed. And I just felt really blessed that day, because he kind of cried on cue and then was comforted. And he had to do that several times, probably 10 or 12 times, do you think?
He's 2 years old.
Yeah, he was 2
wow.
years old. So, and that was...
That's great.
That was really traumatic. But I think overall, what really hit me, especially with doing those winter scenes, and let me just say here that I am not one, I'm not a huge proponent, or at least I wasn't before, of going on Pioneer Trek and reenacting people's terrible experiences. I've never really felt a need to do that.
Sounds like you did it.
But I did it, and it just, the thing that came to me was, you know, I've always fancied myself that I must have royal blood in me somewhere, you know, like you kind of, I think everyone kind of thinks somewhere in my line there's royalty. And
and I
have come to find out that no, there's not, in fact. And my dad has said, yeah, we're pretty much as down to earth as it gets. You know, he's been telling me all these stories of his relatives in the backwoods of Virginia and whatnot. And, but yet I have the blood running through me of these people that loved the Lord, that read the same Book of Mormon that I read, and felt so moved and so convinced by it that they were willing to give everything they had. And you know, that's everything to me.
Mm-hmm.
That really is a real thing to me in my life, mm-hmm. that I have that pioneer heritage.
You know, if I can add this, I really do believe that that's nobility, having that pioneer
right.
heritage.
Right.
That is royal blood.
Exactly.
Thank goodness for their sacrifice and their efforts. And for the stories they left behind that are so, like you said, TC, those stories, the reason you portrayed them as you did is because they're relevant to us, and they inspire hope and you know, desire to move forward in our own lives and stay right, you know, stay right with the gospel. TC, talk a little bit about some of the miracles that you chose for this film. Share some of those with us.
Well, you know, even though it is an hour and a half feature-length film, there's way more than we could ever cover.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you know, the title is a little misleading because I decided to call it 17 Miracles, but you know, the reality of miracles is what one person thinks of as a miracle, another person will just completely say it's happenstance.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, we don't specifically point out, here's a miracle, ding, here's another miracle, ding.
Yeah.
Because some people they'll look through there and they'll find 30 miracles. I can find way more than 17.
Mm-hmm.
But other people may look at it and say, I don't really believe there's a miracle in there at all.
They may think it's coincidence or something like that.
Yeah. And there's a great quote is that there are really only two ways to live your life. One is as if nothing in your life is a miracle, and the other is as if everything's a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
That's a quote by Albert Einstein.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that really applies to this film. And hopefully a viewer can watch the film, come away from it, and have discussions with their family about, well, what did you think? And do you think? And what, you know, and come up with mm-hmm. some things that create a really good discussion for a family.
You had mentioned earlier that the fact that Levi Savage had the experience that he had with the Donner Party, and then being in New York at the exact time when he mm-hmm. needed to be a help to the Willie mm-hmm. Handcart Company was a miracle.
Yeah, and that's not wine into water. You know, that's not some great
right.
thing that appears. But you stand back 150 years and look at that, and mm-hmm. you can see the Lord's hand in getting adding another person into that flock that could really help them mm-hmm. get across the plains.
You know what's interesting, and I've seen this in my life, and I'm sure many of our listeners will relate to this, is that many times the things you experience day to day, you wouldn't point them out, like you said, as being a miracle. But you get 10 years down the road and look at where you are, and then you look back at the things that brought you to that point, and you see, oh my goodness, that little thing that I thought was just a little, you know, blip in the day really was a miracle that brought me in great part to where I am now. And it's interesting that that you would see mm-hmm. it that way.
Well, let me tell you of a miracle that we portray in the film that's even maybe a little more obvious
mm-hmm.
As a miracle. There was a woman we have early in the film introduced to the audience named Elizabeth Panting.
Mm-hmm.
Elizabeth Panting was a woman who joined the church in England, had a couple of children. She was married to a drunkard and a wife beater.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't know what to do. The saints are all saying we're going to go to Zion, and she's got this guy who, you know, would forbid her from going to the church and so forth. In fact, she he would take her shoes so that she would have no way to go out on a mm-hmm. Sunday, and she would find a way and find a neighbor that would mm-hmm. loan her shoes so she could go out and get to her church meetings. Well, she had a blessing by Wilford Woodruff, and this future prophet told her, if you will be true, you and your two children will make it to Zion safely. She decided to go. She gets on a train to go to Liverpool to catch the boat with mm-hmm. other saints. She gets on the train and looks out the window and sees her husband walking up and down that area looking for her. And he has a gun and has threatened he would kill her if she ever left him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she bows her head and says a prayer. And her husband gets on the train, starts walking down the aisle toward her and her two children. She does the only thing she can think to do. She says to the lady across from her, "Would you trade hats with me?" And, you know, that's kind of a silly thing. That's kind of a dumb little thing. You think I wouldn't know if my wife had on a different hat? Hey, who are you? I've never seen you before. But the point is she does something. She doesn't just put it on the Lord and say, "Okay, I've been doing what you said. Now save me." Mm-hmm. She tries to think of something, and that's all she could come up with. Mm-hmm. She trades hats with this lady. Her husband walks up, puts his hand on her shoulder and spins her around, looks into her face, looks into the face of his two children, and does not recognize them, and continues off down the aisle looking for his wife and his kids. That's a miracle.
Wow.
That's a movie miracle, because that makes that makes for great tension and great storytelling to have that as a miracle to tell in the film.
That really is amazing. Tell us some more stories. I want to hear more of some of the stories that you encountered.
Well, I loved filming the story of the Mellers. Mm-hmm. Louisa Meller, the mother, had twins during the early part of the trek, and they both died. Well, she was suffering not only from the effects of that and probably depression and so forth, but being starving and not having the strength and, you know, and still a family to take care of. It was a very bad time. And she went to a certain point and just said, "I can't keep going. You guys are going to have to go on without me." Her husband kissed her goodbye and said, "Well, I'll get everybody else to camp and then I'll, you know, come back to find you." Mm-hmm. Her daughter, Elizabeth, said, I'll stay with you. But her mom just sat on a rock and cried, just despondent. Hmm. And you know what? It would have taken me about an hour to get to that position myself. I mean, she was somewhere in Nebraska. I would have been just outside of Leeds, England, bawling about it. But she couraged all the way to there. Hmm. Her daughter doesn't know what to do, and she kneels down and says a prayer and tells the Lord, "I don't know what to do. I need to help my mother, and I don't know what to do." Her daughter, Elizabeth, stood up, took a few steps, and there, right in front of her, was a pie. Hmm. I believe that would have been an English pie, which means meat and potatoes. Life-sustaining. And also something that she could relate to, something that would give her comfort, I would think. Hmm. She takes it over, and she and her mother shared this pie, girded up their loins, got back on the road, and made it back to camp, met her father, you know, Brother Meller, James Meller, as they were coming into camp. And Louisa Meller says in her story that many times after that, when she felt like giving up, she could always remember that, how good the Lord had been to her to spare her, and would just keep trying. Hmm. That's good. That's relevant to our day.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. You just hit on a word. The word "remember" sometimes strikes me. The Lord gives us those little things in our lives that to us, are miracles. Other people might not see them as miracles, but when we have those miracles in our lives, and then we move forward in our life and we encounter other difficult times. Like you said, that was something that they could look back on and remember how the Lord had blessed them. And I believe we have the same things in our lives, don't we? Little miracles that we can look back on and say, yeah, that was a miracle, and yeah, the Lord is involved in my life.
You know, it's a lesson to us about journal keeping. Hmm. President Eyring's been very strong about admonishing us to do that. Because when you write those kind of things down, mm-hmm. you imagine if these people never in their lives, they didn't write these stories down, and we wouldn't have them and wouldn't be able to take strength from them, and their descendants be able to look back and go, "Wow, there must be something to this. I better be a nice little boy and a nice little girl."
That's wonderful. You're listening to Why I Believe on the Mormon Channel. Our guest today is T.C. Christensen, and also his guest today with us, Kim Stinger, who is a descendant of some of the rescuers of the Willie and Martin Handcart Company. T.C., in this film, you talk a lot about the miracles of the pioneers, and we've talked about a few of them. There was one young man, we were talking about him during the break. His name was Albert. Why don't you share the story of Albert with our listeners?
I find Albert to be really a faith and inspiring story. Albert was a cripple. He was a teenage boy. We don't know very much about him, but he had no use of his legs. But he was determined to get to Zion. And he told his leaders, "I will walk every step of the way if you'll let me go." Because their idea was, well, we're going to have to wait until there's some kind of a wagon train, you know, to put mm-hmm. him in and get him across. And he said, no, I want to get to Zion. Mm. And
he had no use of his legs.
No. So he's had crutches, mm-hmm. which, of course, would have been very primitive. And he just kind of hobbled along, mm-hmm. Was always one of the stragglers coming in. He'd try to get up early and get going early because he couldn't keep up with people. But he was determined to go. Well, Albert's story does not end that wonderfully because he didn't make it. Mm-hmm. But you know what he did do? He made it from Iowa City 300 miles on crutches. Mm. That's a miracle to me. That Albert could have that amount of determination and he had that attitude that I'm going to go if it kills me. And mm-hmm. it did. It killed him. Not until after we finished the film did we even find out his real name. It's so sketchy. But Jolene Alphen, who is our researcher, she came up with his name was Robert Pierce. Hmm. And I love that, to know his name is now, and I'm not saying just because of this film, but it will go on now. Mm-hmm. His name will go on and people will know him. He has no descendants. He was just a teenage boy. But Albert, or Robert Pierce, he stands for just so many of the things that we should stand for, that sacrifice and that unwavering determination mm-hmm. to get to Zion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as you were saying, so many of these pioneers had that determination. No matter, even though it was late in the season, we're going to go. We want to go to Zion. What an incredible display of determination. Kim, let's turn back to you for a second. We were talking about your children earlier and the feelings you had. How did this affect your children? What were their feelings from being involved in this and learning the stories of their ancestors?
I am really anxious to see my kids see the movie. Mm-hmm. When you film a movie, it's kind of piece by piece. Mm-hmm. And I know that my kids will never forget being on the set in the winter. I know my kids will always have these great experiences that they'll remember, but I think once they see the movie, it will all come together for them, and it will be something that will be taken deep into their hearts, and that will be such a testimony builder for them. One of the things I loved about doing this movie was that there were two hymns that I had to teach the kids, and as we were preparing for those scenes, I wanted them to get ready for the scene, and I that was kind of my motivation. But it was such a neat side benefit to have my boys, well, have all my kids gathered around me. We did Israel, Israel, God is Calling, and we really learned that one really well. And then the other hymn that we did was Ye Elders of Israel. Mm-hmm. And I had a really strong desire for my kids to understand what this scene was going to be about. So, you know, we drove back and forth to Provo a lot, and I like to take advantage of having them trapped in the car. And and so especially on the day when we were going to do this scene, which was a church meeting of the saints before they left on the journey, you know, they had gathered and they were singing Ye Elders of Israel. And so I was just bearing my testimony to them. I had just had such a strong feeling of what this meant to these people to be leaving, you know, everything they had and this desire, kind of like Lehi and his family. That's kind of what I likened it to, and thought they must feel like that. You know, this is such a marvelous work, like we say. And so I just got really emotional on the way and just reiterating to my boys, you know, this is not a regular church meeting. You're about to go on this journey and your parents and your whole family is leaving everything you know and, you know, just trying to get them into the scene. And of course, you know, I'm wiping away a tear and asking them, do you understand what I'm saying? And their response is, yeah, can we play our iPods now? And, you know, I mean, they're still typical kids. And so when we got there and right before they shot the scene, I just took them aside and I probably bribed or threatened them that I better see tears glistening in their eyes because I had just built this up, that this was going to be such a neat experience for them because I had felt it so strongly mm-hmm. as we were practicing this song. And to my horror, when we get in there, I'm watching them do the scene. TC's using them for comic relief, and they're tying ties around their faces, and they're hitting each other.
I would never.
So TC was the culprit.
They just did it.
My great moment for them, you know. I was just kind of, what is he doing? But it really turned out neat for me because after that, when they rolled the sound, I was able to sit in and sing Ye Elders of Israel. And TC, before we sang it, kind of talked about how special that song was to him because of his ancestors, and it was special to them. And that, for me, was a really touching moment. So my children may not have had the moment I thought they would, but I had a really neat experience with that. And I think, for sure, when my kids see the movie, I mean, they still talk about, like, Caleb last night was talking about the scene that we did in the barn because we watched the trailer where these mean people were just coming for no reason and the kids are saying, why do they hate us? What did we do? And how that made him feel. But I think seeing the movie as one piece will definitely give them something that they will never forget.
Mm-hmm. You know, that was I'm glad you brought that scene up, Kim, because I tell you, that was a revelation to me in doing research, is to realize that here's these poor saints, and they're just traveling by train from New York trying to get to Iowa City. They can't make it in one day, and they wouldn't go overnight. They're staying, like, in cattle cars most of the time. They're just in there like Schindler's List. And they would stop overnight, and there would be agents of the church that are there that would secure a barn, and they'd go and stay there. They'd get up in the morning and get back on the train. Just for them to stay overnight, the people in those towns would hear about it, and that there's Mormons staying overnight in a barn, and they'd come and harass them. And they would throw rocks at the barn, and they would run alongside it with sticks and pound it and threaten them. And that intolerance is so amazing to me that they're not going to live there. They're not doing it. They're just
passing through
their way. And yet they had that kind of, intolerance put up against them.
I'm trying to put myself in their shoes, having just come in from overseas, long ship ride, I guess you could call it. Those rides across the ocean were a good 4 to 6 weeks, weren't they?
Mm-hmm. 2 months.
Mm-hmm. 2 months. And then trying to make it by train from New York to Iowa City and having that harassment. Wow. What an incredible feat that was. Just to make it to Iowa City, and that was before their handcart journey even began.
Yeah, one thought that I had was that I feel like murmuring for them, you know.
In their behalf.
Yeah. And I didn't even have to go through it. So I just really am impressed with how strong they really were, you know.
Mm-hmm. That's incredible. You know, we're about to wrap up the program today, and I wanted to end by reading a quote from President Gordon B. Hinckley, that is part of the dedicatory prayer at Rock Creek Hollow in Wyoming in 1994. And then I'd like to get your response both to his quote and also just kind of a wrap-up to how you feel about these pioneers and the miracles that they encountered, specifically in this area. Why I Believe is all about where life story meets conversion story, and I'm interested to hear how their life story has touched your conversion story in your own personal life. So here's the quote from President Gordon B. Hinckley he says, in one night, 13 of the Willie Company died and were buried in a common grave, and two others died the next morning. We remember them with appreciation and gratitude. We feel in our hearts the great redeeming power of thy Son, who saved them as he saved all men through his atoning sacrifice. We know that they came to know thee in a particular way in the dire circumstances in which they found themselves in those early winter days in 1856. Our God, our eternal Father, we thank thee for the great inheritance that is ours, that we come of the strain of noble people who valued faith more than life itself, who were willing to work and sacrifice, even to give their lives in death, for the cause in which they believed. Help us to be true to the faith, and help all the generations who shall follow to remain true to the faith, that they may keep the trust which became so much a part of the lives of those who died here and elsewhere along this trail of tears. Kim, let's begin with you, and then we'll wrap up with TC. How have their stories touched your story in your life?
I think more than anything, they have strengthened my resolve to bring my children up in the same faith and to not waver from that. I went to my uncle's funeral recently, and one of the things that he said, that he was quoted as having said, was that it is better to be oppressed than to be coddled. And that really kind of stuck with me, because we do live in a time where we are all coddled, you know. Mm-hmm. And so just thinking, what can I give my children that will help them take this faith and this knowledge of our Savior so deeply into their hearts that they have the strength that our ancestors did coming across the plains.
Mm. Thank you. TC, how have these stories touched your life?
Well, one of the things that I decided early on I really wanted to work into this film was that rendition we were talking about earlier about Ye Elders of Israel. And one of the reasons for that is those words, O Babylon, O Babylon, we bid thee farewell. I've always loved that song, you know, especially as a missionary, you sing that, and it's got a real gusto to it and mm-hmm. so forth. But I learned at my grandmother's funeral, my dad gave a talk about her and her life and learned something I had not known until that point. She was a convert, joined the church in Norway, near Oslo. And when it was her turn, she got on the boat to come over to America and leave part of her family and her country forever, never saw it again. She, along with several other members of their local branch there, mm-hmm. stood on the deck of the ship. And as the ship pulled away, they sang to Norway, O Babylon, O Babylon, we bid thee farewell. Mm. We're going to the mountains of Ephraim to dwell. And I thought, I sure hope that song was written in 1856. And I looked it up, and boy, I only made it by about 2 months. Cyrus mm-hmm. Willock wrote that just before this happened. And mm-hmm. I'm sure they would have sung it, because a great song like that would have gone through the church like wildfire. Mm-hmm. Wildfire. But for me, that was a personal connection. I don't have an ancestor that was from the handcart era. Mm-hmm. But I have ancestors who went through similar things that were able to say, you know what, we're going and we're going to be part of this great Zion, and we're going to leave Babylon behind.
Hmm. That's a great message to end on. Thank you both so much for being with us today. Of course, T.C. Christensen, a film director, writer, producer, and also Kim Stinger, who was involved in T.C.'s recent movie, 17 Miracles. Thank you both for being with us today on Why I Believe.
Good to be here.
Not a problem. It's fun.
And we thank you, our listeners, for listening to Why I Believe. For more information on this program and other programs on the Mormon Channel, go to mormonchannel.org. And we thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day. Mm-hmm.